programs, and an accountant friend identified the one called MAS-90 as the target. The program that would hold their list of vendors and the discount and payment terms for each. With that key knowledge, he next used a software program to identify all the working hosts on the network, and it didn't take him long to locate the correct server used by the accounting department. From the arsenal of hacker tools on his laptop, he launched one program and used it to identify all of the authorized users on the target server. With another, he then ran a list of commonly used passwords, such as blank and password itself. Password worked. No surprise there. People just lose all creativity when it comes to choosing passwords. Only 6 minutes gone, and the game was half over. He was in. Another 3 minutes to very carefully add his new company address, phone number, and contact name to the list of customers. And then, for the crucial entry, the one that would make all the difference, the entry that said all items were to be sold to him at 1% over Honorable Auto Parts cost. In slightly under 10 minutes, he was done. He stopped long enough to tell Kayla thanks. He was through checking his emails, and he had reached Mike Talbot. Change of plans. He was on the way to a meeting at a client's office. And he wouldn't forget about recommending her for that job in marketing, either. Mitnick message. Train your people not to judge a book solely by its cover. Just because someone is well-dressed and well-groomed, he shouldn't be any more believable. Analyzing the con. The intruder, who called himself Peter Milton, used two psychological subversion techniques, one planned, the other improvised on the spur of the moment. He dressed like a management worker, earning good money. Suit and tie, hair carefully styled. These seem like small details, but they make an impression. I discovered this myself inadvertently. In a short time as a programmer at GTE California, a major telephone company no longer in existence, I discovered that if I came in one day without a badge, neatly dressed but casual, say, sports shirt, chinos, and Dockers, I'd be stopped and questioned. Where's your badge? Who are you? Where do you work? Another day I'd arrive, still without a badge, but in a suit and tie, looking very corporate. I'd use a variation of the age-old piggybacking technique, blending in with a crowd of people as they walk into a building or a secure entrance. I would latch onto some people as they approached the main entrance and walk in, chatting with the crowd as if I was one of them. I walked past, and even if the guards noticed I was badgeless, they wouldn't bother me because I looked like management, and I was with people who were wearing badges. From this experience, I recognized how predictable the behavior of security guards is. Like the rest of us, they were making judgments based on appearances, a serious vulnerability that social engineers learn to take advantage of. The attacker's second psychological weapon came into play when he noticed the unusual effort that the receptionist was making. Handling several things at once, she didn't get testy, but managed to make everyone feel they had her full attention. He took this as the mark of someone interested in getting ahead, in proving herself. And then, when he claimed to work in the marketing department, he watched to see her reaction, looking for clues to indicate if he was establishing a rapport with her. He was. To the attacker, this added up to someone he could manipulate through a promise of trying to help her move into a better job. Of course, if she had said she wanted to go into the accounting department, he would have claimed he had contacts for getting her a job there instead. Intruders are also fond of another psychological weapon used in this story, building trust with a two-stage attack. He first used that chatty conversation about the job in marketing, and he also used name-dropping, giving the name of another employee, a real person, incidentally, just as the name he himself used was the name of a real employee. He could have followed up the opening conversation right away with a request to get into a conference room. But instead, he sat down for a while and pretended to work, supposedly waiting for his associate, another way of allaying any possible suspicions because an intruder wouldn't hang around. He didn't hang around for very long, though. Social engineers know better than to stay at the scene of the crime any longer than necessary. Just for the record, by the laws on the books at the time of this writing, Anthony had not committed a crime when he entered the lobby. He had not committed a crime when he used the name of a real employee. He had not committed a crime when he talked his way into the conference room. He had not committed a crime when he plugged into the company's network and searched for the target computer. Not until he actually broke into the computer system did he break the law. Mitnick message. Allowing a stranger into an area where he can plug a laptop into the corporate network increases the risk of a security incident. It's perfectly reasonable for an employee, especially one from off-site, to want to check his or her email from a conference room. But unless the visitor is established as a trusted employee, or the network is segmented to prevent unauthorized connections, this may be the weak link that allows company files to be compromised. Snooping on Kevin. Many years ago, when I was working in a small business, I began to notice that each time I walked into the office that I shared with the three other computer people who made up the IT department, this one particular guy, Joe, I'll call him here, would quickly toggle the display on his computer to a different window. I immediately recognized this as suspicious. When it happened two more times the same day, I was sure something was going on that I should know about. What was this guy up to that he didn't want me to see? Joe's computer acted as a terminal to access the company's mini-computers, so I installed a monitoring program on the VAX mini-computer that allowed me to spy on what he was doing. The program acted as if a TV camera was looking over his shoulder, showing me exactly what he was seeing on his computer. My desk was next to Joe's. I turned my monitor as best I could to partly mask his view, but he could have looked over at any moment and realized I was spying on him. Not a problem. He was too enthralled in what he was doing to notice. What I saw made